Hi, and welcome to The Literary Sipper. This is Amber Vitti Hill, your host, and today we are going to be asking the question, what was the last classic novel you read? And the reason I bring this up is because summer is coming, and I've been thinking a lot about rereading classics or old favorites over the summer. And I know Gretchen Rubin does this, did this one summer where she read the entirety of Proust for the summer of Proust, she called it. And I wrote a recent blog post where I said that for me, it might be time to reread Zadie Smith's On Beauty, which is one of my favorite books of all time, and think it's definitely a modern classic. And that got me thinking about this definition of classic. And with the constant movement forward with books, there are so many releases every month. I'm getting constant updates from all of the big publishers, Penguin House and Doubleday and things like that, where you're just inundated with newness all of the time. The new releases in the wall of a bookstore can be, you know, 15, 25 deep. And it's just an impossibility to think that you're going to get through them all. I'm an avid reader, and I read probably about 5 to 6 books a month. But I know people who read 15 and 20 books a month, read a book a day, who are much more prolific than I. And I know people who sometimes read one book a year, and it's all okay. This isn't any judgment, but I just want you all to know it's overwhelming to get inundated with the newness of releases all of the time. And one of the greatest joys in life is rereading something old, revisiting a comfort novel, revisiting a children's classic, revisiting a classic that maybe you read in a classroom and always wondered what it would be like if you didn't have to write that 10-page paper on it, if you could just enjoy the words as they were. And when it feels like, with all the genre and subgenre and creations that are out there, that you'll just never catch up, all of the series, all of the backlist, and your TBR list, and maybe stack of books next to your bookshelf. So what happens when you do have that longing to reread something? Do you have to exchange it for the newness? Or can you just decide, I want to read this classic, and this is going to be the summer of classic reads? And I haven't decided whether I'm going to do that or not. I still find that to be tough. I like to have novelty in my reading, and that's why I switch platforms. I listen to some books. I read ebooks. I have hardcover books. I have paperbacks. I listen to it all. I love reading. It's my hobby. But when I think about classic, I do think about holding a book in my hand with a pen. And so maybe for me, it's about listening to a classic being read by a really great author. I keep a reading journal and keep track of what I've read over the years. And I have always done this on and off, but I've been really diligent about it lately, and probably since the inception of this podcast. So I could say specifically what I felt about any certain book at any given time. But I can tell you, I looked through them, and there are not a lot of classics in the last few years. And I think the last one I read was probably Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I'll get into a little bit more in a minute. But in that journal, I also keep track of lists. I keep track of lists of books that I want to read, books that my friends have recommended to me that I haven't gotten to, lists of books I want to reread, prize winners. And there's a huge list of classics that for whatever reason, I never got around to reading. And as someone who taught English literature for the majority of my life and continue to advocate books to everyone, I know I've discovered that when you open up a classic, you can start to connect the dots culturally to references, both when the book was written and also to the progeny that book can lay claim to. So what I mean by this is if you open up a book like Huckleberry Finn, for instance, which Ernest Hemingway in the 1920s called the greatest American novel ever written, and that continued to be taught for so many years, and then now really has gone out of favor in terms of being in the classroom, you wonder if there's going to be a group of readers who are going to look at those classics with a different pair of lenses and wonder about things like why it was censored in the first place. Why would it be censored or banned today? Why is it a good thing that it's not in the classrooms? And start to ask these questions about this canonical piece that has lasted so long in our history. And I wonder often, why is it that certain books last longer and certain ones don't? And I also wonder, for someone like myself who, you know, has a master's degree in English, who studied and had a curriculum that was supposed to give me a broad survey, how can there still be classics that I've never read? For example, I have never read War and Peace. I've never attempted it. Maybe it'll be my summer of attempting War and Peace. I'm not sure. And I've never read Jude the Obscure, and I've never read Gravity's Rainbow. And so these are considered like great pieces, great works of literature. But for whatever reason, I skipped over them. And I think there's a lot of people out there who have skipped over classics, because once you exit out of academia, you get to pick what you like. And maybe you like science fiction and fantasy. But even science fiction and fantasy have books that they were spawned from and out of. Stranger in the Strange Land, for example. Any Ursula Le Guin, for example, spawned all of the science fiction that's out there now. And maybe there's a generation of students who have never read Brave New World, but maybe they have read Never Let Me Go, and they don't understand that those two books are innately connected. Now, the first question you have to determine is what constitutes a classic, and that can be a prickly question, as the canon was often determined by a canon of critics and professors who would determine what got taught in schools or universities and what would be passed down from generation to generation. And sometimes, very rarely, new books would get added. And eventually, new voices. But diversity is a relatively new concept. Multiculturalism became a concept in universities in the late 80s, really. In the 90s, we were kind of beginning to see the canon shift, where books like Beloved would suddenly be considered an American classic. But for our intents and purposes, I often refer to the Penguin Books 100 Most Read Classics as chosen by their readers as a good place to start. And the reason I like this list, it came out a couple of years ago, so it doesn't include, well, as you wouldn't imagine that it would include very many books written in the late 2010s. Or anything. It does include a variety of voices, time periods, and movements, works in translation, and it's a good place to start. And so that's what brought me to Dracula. I kind of glanced down that list and I thought to myself, I can't believe I've never read Dracula. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, by the way, the Francis Ford Coppola version with Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves. I remember seeing that in the movie theater in Ann Arbor and being like, I am in love with this movie, and I've watched it over and over again many times in my life, but I had never read the book. And now, of course, I knew that the book was, you know, this classic example of Gothic literature, and of course, the epistolary style where everything was written in letters or newspaper clippings or journals, and it was somewhat varied voices and really interesting. There were a variety of tropes in there that became tropes for much fantasy later on, the helpless female, the sort of Madonna aspect of the female character, the damsel in distress, who actually has some agency and some power towards the end. Which is like, if you look at a movie like Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis, that's kind of what it was. She starts off as a damsel in distress and becomes the agent of her own escape. And that's a little bit of what Mina is in Dracula. You also have a bunch of character tropes. You have the American cowboy, the psychiatrist. You have multiple narrators. You have the exchange of immortality and morality for immortality. And so I found that in reading Dracula, that there were a lot of places that it could seem very old-fashioned and very boring and very two-dimensional, But when you realize that this was the first time that anybody had done this thing, this multiple narrator, written letters from a different perspective, offered up a female character that, as much as they were touting her creamy virtue, they were also allowing her to help defeat the monster. Then you realize how characters were birthed from that. And that's what makes it special, is when you can connect those dots. So what is your classic that you thought you might never read? Is it Beloved, 100 Years of Solitude? Maybe you never read Great Expectations, or you pretended to read Things Fall Apart in the 10th grade, and now it's time to really read it. Or maybe it's time to read things like Things Fall Apart because you've been to Africa and you want to have a sense of Chinua Achebe's voice and history and place in literature that came out of now having a visceral experience of the country itself. There are so many reasons to add a classic to your summer book list, and I would really encourage you to do it this year. And let me know if I can make any suggestions for you. I'm thinking about doing another summer reading guide, but I'm not sure how many of you read it last year or used it. So it'd be great to hear from some of you if you'd like me to do that again. In the meantime, the latest blog post on the Substack is just 5 books that I recommend this summer that are backlist. They're not anything new. And that way, you know, they're kind of tried and true, and I've read them, and they cover nonfiction. There's a quirky little summer romance in there because that's a traditional summer reading trope. A classic, as I see it, Zadie Smith's On Teeth. There's the autobiography, Born Standing Up by Steve Martin, which I definitely recommend, as I recommend the documentary about Steve Martin that is on Hulu currently as well. He is one of the greatest writers of our time, and I don't think people give him enough credit for the writing that went into his comedy. But also, I love Shop Girl is one of my favorite novels as well. And of course, his memoir is great, which is why I recommend it. But I'm really curious about your classics and how you define classic. Is it just something that's old? Or is it something that multiple generations consider the best of its kind? I think this question can be applied to all artistic enterprises. What makes something classic music, classical music versus classic rock, for example, is an interesting question. And also, of course, why do we keep going to see Monet's Water Lilies year after year, decade after decade, generation after generation? What makes that classic art? And I really encourage you to go and find a list that works for you. If you don't have any interest in it after the first 10 pages, then put it down. Nobody's expecting you to finish Moby Dick by the end of the summer. But I will say this, it's good to challenge your brain, and sometimes it's good to pick up that dictionary and look up all those words that you have to look up, because it's only going to make you think more deeply about what it is you're reading and have an understanding of the world once you're done. And isn't that the greatest feeling in the world? To me, it is. I hope you're well, and I hope that you know that wherever you are and whatever you're reading, it's all good. See you next time. Thanks for listening to The Literary Sipper. I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something new. If you did, please subscribe and leave a rating and review if you're feeling especially generous. Until next time, keep reading, keep writing, and keep putting your voice in the world. It's waiting for you. Thanks for listening to The Literary Sipper. I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something new. If you did, please subscribe and leave a rating and review if you're feeling especially generous. Until next time, keep reading, keep writing, and keep putting your voice in the world. It's waiting for you.